Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brock and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
I'm Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our co-host, Alan Phillips, attorney at law in North Carolina. Today is December 13th, 2012. We passed the 12-12-12 mark, and we're moving into a new cycle. Thanks for listening to these free informative broadcasts, and you can be part of this educational movement. Simply tell your friends to listen into the show, send them an email with a link, tweet it on Twitter, post the share button from Facebook, post it up to Dig, StumbleUpon, Reddit, MySpace, or any of the other social networks. You can even take the widget embed code from any particular show that you like and put it onto your own web page or blog. So we are so pleased to have many, many listeners to the show each week, and we're getting ready for the holiday season. I wanted to give a little bit of inspiration, which I love. It keeps me going every day. This is called Dark Knowing Light. That the spark of God within us will ponder God. What is the surprise? But when the animal lifts its eyes to the heavens, when the dark side of man lets in a little light, that is truly wondrous. How can darkness know light? How can earth know heaven? Only with the power of He who is beyond both darkness and light, heaven and earth. It's very philosophical. It's very deep. You have to think about those few lines quite a bit to see what they mean about the animal side of each of us as individuals, as humans. We have our own kind of different parts of us, the soul entity and the animal side of us, that is, just running by instinct or survival mode, stepping over other people without thinking that or seeing the soul aspect within each of them as well. So how can that spark of God within us ponder God? What is the surprise? How do you like that, Alan?
That is deep.
That's our beginning, because we're constantly dealing with the evil powers and business and industry and corporation and governments, and as well as individuals who are out there doing the good work out in the field.
And is that in some way a part of all of us and part of the whole, and something that certainly needs to be healed and brought into proper balance, but maybe not something that in an ultimate sense needs to be eliminated because it's an inherent part of all of us?
No, it doesn't have to be eliminated. It has to be tamed. I would say it has to be domesticated, so that
yes,
we're aware of our bodily functions and our desires and that aspect of self, but we look at it in the face and say, no, you're not going to control what I do. I'm going to do something based on a higher ground, something morally and ethically correct, something that will bring more light into the world instead of more darkness.
Amen.
Amen. And now, after our sermon, we're going to... I like this beginning. We're going to go ahead and talk about what's happening on the ground. on the Earth's
you're on the Earth plane.
Yeah.
Boy, somebody sent me an email this morning, or I got an email this morning, talking about a new form of handcuffs that are being developed that would not only allow the officer to cause an electric shock to the person wearing them, but could also enable the officer to cause an injection of, you know, whatever substance, something to pacify the aggressive handcuffed person, or, you know, the list is potentially endless there.
Mm-hmm.
And my response to the person who sent that to me was, is there another nearby planet with openings? I'm, you know, less inclined to continue living on this one, you know, the more I hear about where things are going. I mean, there's obviously some merit to that idea. Police officers deal with very difficult criminals at times, and even in handcuffs, some of them will still behave in potentially dangerous and inappropriate ways. So, in you know, if controlling, I don't want to get too far off the topic for too long this morning, but controlling people, you know,
just, we can talk about anything we like today. This is, we're going to be on vacation for the next 2 weeks,
yep.
I think. Are we not?
Yep. Well, we may, we'll talk about that, but
okay.
Perhaps next week would be the last show before a
okay.
couple of weeks off, since we're still, but let's talk and see what our schedules are. So pay attention to our schedule, folks. We may or may not be on vacation for a couple
okay.
of weeks and the rest of the month, but.
And I was listening, besides these handcuffs, I was just hearing a story about a scientist who is discovering that animals actually talk, and animals actually have feelings, and they grieve, and they communicate amongst each other as a community, and they're slowly detecting the verbalization, the language that they have. And this makes me think, wow, the animals are evolving, or at least we're understanding how high up they have evolved to a higher plane where they do have more soul energy than we might have presupposed.
You know, what's interesting to me is the starting assumption that they don't, and then it's this miraculous discovery when we find out that they do, rather than just assuming, of course, all living beings communicate in one fashion or another, in one degree or another. Why would they not? Or how could they not? You know, the question is more along the lines of what's the nature and level of sophistication and so forth. And
well, I think that we knew that they communicated, they had sound, but I think it's to what you just said, the level of sophistication of interaction amongst themselves rather than just instinct, you know, what I'm talking about.
Right, and we have found that animals express higher levels of intelligence and higher capability, learning capability, and so forth. We can, you know, have continued at least in some instances to find they got more going on than we thought. You know, to make a long story short. So it's fascinating field of study, and I would be delighted to hear more about that at another time. That's very intriguing.
Yeah, I'll send you a link to that. They were doing studies on prairie dogs and the different sounds that they make when they came across different kind of potential threats or community events. So, and I also think very highly of dolphins and other mammals in the ocean that
yep.
that save other living beings, including humans, who are not such a friendly animal.
At least not consistently.
Yeah. Okay.
Some of us are more friendly than others.
Well
a lot going on. A lot going on with vaccines in the news recently. Let's jump into some of the many different issues here. I wanted to do a follow-up. I'm sure we talked previously about a challenge to Vermont's new restrictions on the philosophical exemptions there. The good news was that an attempt to remove the philosophical exemption altogether was averted, but they added restrictions, which included that to get the exemption, you have to sign a statement about vaccines that you might not necessarily agree with. And
uh-huh.
it was fascinating because that was challenged, originally came to light to a, I believe it was a mother of three, who was also a second-year law student, and she recognized that as a free speech issue. The First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution has, among other things, the right to free speech, which I now understand, because I wasn't aware of this. If I learned it in law school, I had since forgotten, and I'll put it like that, that not only do you have the right to say what you want to say, within appropriate boundaries, but you have the right to be free from being compelled by government to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So if they say, in order to have the exemption, you have to sign this document, and I don't have the statement in front of me, but in effect it was saying about how wonderful vaccines are and what a horrible person you are for, you know, daring to refuse vaccines. Not literally, of course, in those kinds of words, but that was sort of the essence of the message.
Right.
And that's, you know, you have a right to the exemption without having to agree with the health department's, as a part of the government, the health department's view on the matter. So the health department reviewed this, and it didn't, it was really a very minor change that was needed in the wording of, I think it's the form that they were going to require people to say. It was not a significant change in the wording, but now instead of saying that you agree with the health department's view, they'll have a form that you sign that says, I have reviewed and understand the required parent education information developed by the Vermont Department of Health, which is pretty close, but not the same thing as saying that you agree that they're correct.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is, it may sound like a trivial point, and I suppose in some ways it is, but this is the same thing that is, same kind of law that's just been passed in California this year and in Washington State last year. And I think both of those particular laws, and maybe not the Vermont law, but both of the California and Washington State laws violate the First Amendment with regard to what's called the Free Exercise Clause, referring to the free exercise of religion. I already thought they were unconstitutional, but now I see an additional ground, thanks to the folks in Vermont who brought this issue up there, that there is also, I think, a free speech issue here. When someone is requiring you, when the government is requiring you to say something that you don't agree with.
Uh-huh. It's forcing you.
Yeah, and what's interesting about it is they don't have to even offer the exemption at all. But once they do offer it, they have to offer it in a way that's consistent with the U.S. Constitution, because the federal law, the federal constitution in this instance, is a higher legal authority than state law. So the states have to, in theory, draft and interpret their state laws where it concerns a constitutional issue within the boundaries of the U.S. Constitution. So this is just really fascinating. It's a small but I think very critical piece, because this is legislation, this kind of legislation, is sweeping the country. As states' vaccine exemption rates go up, the response of the pharmaceutical industry through its control over state and federal health agencies is to push for the enactment of laws that restrict access to the exemptions. And the way that that is restricted is something that, if it's going to be done lawfully, and big question about whether that's actually the case in any given instance, depending on how things play out. But at least in theory, if they're going to do this lawfully, they've got to be careful about how they do it.
So this is one small step for mankind.
Yes.
I mean, it sets a precedent that you can go back and look that this is the way it was understood and rewritten to abide by the law, and so this now you have something else to use for the future.
We have another tool, so we can take mm-hmm. this same idea theoretically, and I think mm-hmm. as a practical matter as well, either to state legislators or to health departments in Washington and California, say, look what just happened in Vermont. You guys need to do the same thing here, because your law, you know, as worded, or your forms as worded, have the same First Amendment issue. So it's a good thing. And maybe we'll put at least a little bit of brakes on the train that otherwise would be steamrolling around the country trying to implement laws making it harder and harder for parents to get exemptions, vaccine exemptions for their kids.
And you didn't just mention that there are more and more parents who are considering giving or not giving vaccines to their kids. And in Twin Falls, Idaho, the number of parents in Idaho seeking vaccination exemptions has increased during the last 5 years. And they have data on that, that 370 children in South Central Idaho were exempted from vaccinations. That's 4% of the kids enrolled in the school in the region, an 88% increase compared with the number of kids exempted in 2008. So we are seeing little pockets of areas around the country where there is, if you plotted it on a curve on a chart, you would see an awareness going on, concern for their kids and getting these vaccines. People must be listening to the show or reading online other things and talking amongst themselves about, is this a safe thing to do? And maybe even questioning the physician to say, let me see the material that comes with the vaccine. Let me see whether this is this a multi-dose, is this a single dose? What can I do to lessen the effects upon my child for side effects? What do I do if I have my child is going to have a fever? Why are you telling me to give them aspirin before they even get the needed immune response of a fever that shows that their immune system is working? So there's a lot of questions that parents have, and that's why they're probably exempting, not want to give them to their children at this point.
Well, and I'm just fascinated that with the control that the pharmaceutical industry has over the state and federal health agencies and has the so-called authorities in their pocket, control over the mainstream media, that despite all of that effort and this incredible propaganda machine that functions on multiple levels to serve their private agenda, that exemptions are nevertheless on the rise, that parents are more and more, parents and others alike, more and more looking for information and finding information that raises questions about the vaccine policies and laws. So this is a good thing, but it, of course, there's profound resistance, and one of the places where that resistance manifests itself is in legislation. And I just want to underscore a kind of a legal technicality here, that whether or not a law is officially or formally unconstitutional is not something that we get to decide. Ultimately, a law is presumed to be constitutional, no matter how egregious it may be, until a judge says it's unconstitutional, till it is officially adjudged to be unconstitutional. So this opens an enormous loophole for state legislators to be politically swayed into enacting laws that may be egregiously unconstitutional, but if they have the votes, they can enact, pass the law and get it enacted, and then it sits out there as quote-unquote good law unless and until it's formally challenged in court, and a court says officially and formally this is unconstitutional and then strikes the law or does whatever the court decides to do about the fact that it's unconstitutional. And
right, so,
so
they have to look at the basis and the foundation, the premise of why they're making a judgment or a law. And that needs to have a closer examination of these fundamental principles and theories behind why we do these things.
And the procedures as well. Now, I would say that in principle it is absolutely appropriate that a law could only be formally unconstitutional when a court says so, because otherwise anybody could just make a law unconstitutional anytime they wanted to by just saying that's unconstitutional. So of
right.
course, you know, so of course we don't get to decide that. Now, any of us may have an opinion about whether the law is unconstitutional or not, or whether a court should rule it to be unconstitutional or not. But the legislature's we have in the legal system, and because of this, we defer to the legislatures unless a court says otherwise. So you've got to either get the bad law into court and hopefully have the judge agree with you, or get your state legislature to amend or repeal the law. And I'll give you just one extreme example. We've talked about this in the past, so I'll try to be brief with it, Debbie. But we have a law here in North Carolina that allows children of any age to consent to any vaccine and to other medical treatments. And I sat in front of a state senator with a formally researched and written legal memorandum showing the four state and federal constitutional violations and the four state and federal statutory violations of this egregiously bad law. But that memorandum and all of those conflicts that I researched and wrote about and asserted, and that's posted at the vaccinerights.com website for anybody who wants to look at that. That memorandum, in my opinion, my professional opinion for that matter, doesn't change the fact that the law is there and doesn't keep that law from functioning the way that it was written and intended and designed to do as enacted by the state legislature. So it really is important to do more than just complain. We have to figure out how to go the next step. With regard to that law in particular, I've been working over a period of months now to find people who would be willing to schedule a meeting with their state representatives and bring me in there so I can talk to them about the problems and see if we can get someone to repeal this really, really bad law. My state, well, now former representatives, because I recently moved, but my former representatives refused to do anything about this, which says something to me profound about their lack of integrity, because every representative in the country, state and federal, takes an oath to uphold the Constitution, and the state representatives take an oath to uphold the state and federal constitutions. And my representatives didn't disagree with me that this law was unconstitutional. They just decided for political reasons that they weren't going to deal with it. So that's a lack of integrity. Those are not people who should be in office. I don't know any polite way to say it, so I'm just going to call it like I see it. But this is part of the ongoing problem. You know, I have people write to me with comments and questions about legal issues on a regular basis, and how do we fight this vaccine controversy? And there are many different levels and parts and pieces to the answer of what can we do to make a difference. But what is fundamentally at the core of the whole problem that ultimately has to be addressed if any of the other layers and levels and pieces are ever going to be dealt with effectively with any real and lasting change is that we have to shine a very bright light on the underlying corruption and conflicts of interest. Because until we do that, the authorities are going to be deemed the authorities, and they are ultimately going to steer the course of policy and law, predominantly, if not exclusively. So we can come into our state legislators with all the science in the world, but more of them are more likely to say, that's all well and good, but the CDC says this. They're going to defer to the authorities far more often than not, unless and until we convince them and show them the corruption underlying the current authoritative system, so that the legislators understand that we need protection from the quote-unquote authorities and not to be dictated to by the quote-unquote authorities.
That's also quite heavy. That's quite heavy. You did throw some light in there to the darkness as we started the show. And to upturn corruption, whether it is within ourselves or within government or industry or the policies or the authorities, that is a heavy load. That is very difficult to do.
It is, and yet it's core and fundamental to the issue. You know, it's. I tell my clients, you know, we need to change laws here, and I realize that's like handing you a glass of water and saying, go put out a forest fire. But, you know, I just will say, you know, as a metaphor, David did beat Goliath. You know, if I didn't think there was a possibility of this, I'd be saying, let's all pull together, go somewhere and start our own country and build our own military to defend ourselves from being taken over. You know, I mean, I'm being facetious here or sarcastic, but
yes,
the point
we need to make sure that this is just well known to the listeners that you're just giving a metaphor. This is not an intent. honestly, we have to be careful what we say. This is public view, and anybody can hear. We know this is an educational broadcast, just two people talking to each other. We're not giving you individual advice. If you need help, if you do need some legal or medical advice, you must see your own personal health care or a legal advisor. I just want to throw that in there.
Sure. The point is, we've either got to fix the system or get out of it, and I don't really see a practical way to get out of it. Even though fixing it seems like an enormous uphill battle, I think that's our option. That's the task we have before us. I think to fix the system, you have to convince people that the system is broken and needs to be fixed. And most people just want to point to the authorities and say, everything's fine. Look, they're telling us vaccines are fine. What's your problem? Leave me alone. And more and more parents and others, though, are realizing that that's not that simple anymore. If it ever was, it certainly isn't now. And so I'm just very, very proud of the growing number of people who are able to look past what they're being told to say, well, wait a minute, I'm going to look at this and I'll make up my own mind. I think that's the hardest part for people in this issue, because we want to be able to trust.
They have to be brave. They have to have courage.
It takes enormous courage.
Yes.
And I want
to let you know that we have a couple of people listening in with us. And for those folks who are guests in the chat, you can always call in to 347-945-6956 or click that blue Skype button and call in and talk to us. Ask us your question or give us your comment. What's your opinion about all of this? And do you think we're heading in the right direction? So,
well, Debbie, let me bring up a little humorous piece of the news for you recently. Humorous, it's one of those you have to laugh to keep from crying kind of things, I suppose. But Massachusetts, this is a headline from a Natural News article, recent Natural News article. Massachusetts city announces, turn in your guns, get a free flu shot.
Yay!
I almost want to go out and buy a gun just so I can turn it in and get a free flu shot. You know, that's how excited I was about this. Unfortunately, I don't live in Massachusetts, so I guess I'm out of the loop.
They're trading one shot for another, I guess.
Touche.
Touche. Uh-huh. So, I mean, what's the idea? What is the idea behind that?
Well, they have an annual Goods for Guns buyback program, which Mike Adams, I think, wrote this article. He says, it sounds like an April Fool's joke, but actually it isn't.
Uh-huh.
So he says, here's how it works. You locate a firearm that might protect you from a violent crime or even a runaway criminal government someday, and you bring it to the police department. Then they destroy your gun. And in return for this, they assault you with a mercury-laced vaccine and call it even.
Uh-huh. He's quite humorous.
Yes.
I mean, he's facetious, really.
He doesn't pull punches. He says, bargain.
Did they really destroy the gun, or did they just store it away?
Well, supposedly they destroyed it. I don't know if they do it in front of you so you can verify. It's a good question. But he says it sounds like a good bargain if you're a brain-dead zombie. Me think guns bad, vaccines good, must destroy guns. Take vaccine shots. Watch TV. Drink fluoride. Government good. So he's really gone all out on this one. But that's what you get to do when you're the health ranger.
One of the great things is always to read the comments that people have and what side they stand on. Let's see. Well, the idea of these gun buybacks is to get illegal guns out of the hands of criminals to somehow make things safer. Stupid, of course, but they do have a point. I think part of the idea is that these guns can't be sold or pawned because they were used in crimes. Still, really, well, you know, the idea
they're sort of missing the point there, though.
Which,
it's like somebody says...
I'm just going to say, you know, is it the mom and pop at home who has a gun on the side for their, maybe they go hunting, that they enjoy it, or it's a, like a protection, a feeling of security? Are they the people who are going to hand their gun in, or is the criminal in the street going to go hand? I think I need a shot. I think I better go hand in my criminal weapon. I don't know.
While I'm here, would you go ahead and slap the cuffs on me? I mean, it makes absolute that reasoning makes absolutely no sense. Like the saying goes, if you outlaw guns, only outlaws will have guns. You know, it's you're not going to get criminals, you know, bringing in their guns to get a flu shot. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. What it is an attempt to disarm. I read something recently that
Tom Tilt says, if you're dumb enough to fall for that one, then you'll fall for anything. Some of the comments are so funny. Okay, go ahead.
I read somewhere recently that there are something on the order of 600,000 hunters in Wisconsin, making them the eighth largest army in the world. I don't know if that's literally true or not, but it's a real interesting point because of the gun laws, whatever your personal views, pro or con, about guns and gun rights and gun ownership and so forth, the reality is that we are a heavily armed nation in terms of individual ownership and possession of guns. I have no idea what the exact numbers are in terms of what percentage of society, people, adults own one or more guns, but it is a very large percentage, I'm sure, probably more so than many, if not most, other Western nations, I would guess. But in any event, it's one of the reasons why it would just never be practical to occupy, for a foreign government to occupy the U.S., even if they crippled us economically or some other way. First of all, we're geographically just too large and vast, and second of all, not every one of us, but many of us have guns, and it's just...
I think probably more and more people are contemplating it if they never even thought about it or considered it in the past. Because of the way our nation is turning, these kinds of things come into your mind a little bit more as, are we really following a constitution that protects our rights? And what do I have to do if something, especially when Greg Glazer gets on every month? I mean, he plants these new ideas into our heads. So, I don't know.
It's all Greg's fault, huh? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no. I mean, it's just talking to you guys. Well, do you want to talk about the Alliance for Natural Health? It says free speech court ruling could have far-reaching consequences.
Yeah, this is a real interesting article. I'm not thoroughly versed with this off the top of my head because it wasn't really specific to vaccines, but it's sort of interesting because... The FDA, this article from the Alliance for Natural Health, said the FDA thinks that misbranding can mean a completely true statement about a product, but if it doesn't have FDA permission, they're considering it misbranding. So, as the
an example. Do they give us an example of any kind? Because I don't know. Misbranding means that they're saying something about the particular product that is not true?
No. This is the whole point. What they're saying is that according to the FDA, you are misbranding. Even if you make a completely true statement about a product, it's still misbranding if you didn't get the FDA's permission first.
Which is a ridiculous
concept, because free speech says you can say whatever you want to as long as what you are doing is not in a narrow category of causing or inciting harm, in sort of a general concept terms.
The FDA rules all labeling, and that's why. They are the dictator of labels. That must be why.
Well, the bottom line is the FDA, being controlled by the pharmaceutical industry, does not want to have any competition for pharmaceutical products. So you don't get to put out your cherry juice and put on the back label talking about all the health benefits of cherry juice.
We know cherry juice is good for gout. I mean, there's no question about that.
But there is a question about whether you're allowed to say that. And that's what's so absurd about all this. Well, the misbranding there was a sales representative for a pharmaceutical company that was caught on tape promoting an off-label use of a drug to doctors. And this is one of the ways the pharmaceutical industry makes enormous profits. It's one of the ways that they encounter enormous criminal and civil fines for promoting a use of a drug that's so-called off-label. In other words, they haven't gotten authority from the FDA to promote a drug for a particular reason. Maybe it hasn't been properly tested or whatever. But it may be that, this particular sales rep was caught doing just that, promoting an off-label use of a drug to doctors. He was convicted by a jury, but he appealed the conviction, arguing that his right to free speech under the First Amendment was being restricted, and a federal court agreed with that.
Wow.
So there's
wow, that's fascinating.
Well,
I mean,
it's disturbing on one level.
It disturbs me in terms of it being a drug, but if it was a natural product that had tons of scientific research and backing to the claim, that I can understand. But if it's a drug that has been tested, let's say it's a drug has been tested only for adults who are 30 years males, 30 years and older, and now he's saying, you know, we give this to children. So, but it's never ever been tested for children, officially, and yet in the medical world it's being given. So what does that mean? That they're little guinea pigs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm not real clear on exactly what the implications are here and exactly what the circumstances are. But it bothers me that the court said that the ban on so-called off-label marketing violates free speech.
Okay.
Because this opens the door for the pharmaceutical industry to market its products for anything, whether it's been approved by the FDA for that or not, and that is disturbing. And it also,
it's a double standard, is it not, that we cannot say on the label for the cherry juice this is will help your gout, or it's been used in the under studies for gout with good efficacy, and yet here's somebody who's going to be marketing a drug and have freedom of speech to do that.
Well, this is the point of the author of this article, that while this looks bad in the sense that we just discussed, it may have a bright side, because what that may do, what this ruling may do, if it stands, now the case is probably going to be appealed, so this is probably not the final decision on this issue. This case could find its way up to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
But this could open the door for free speech to be applied for anybody else who wants to say that a non-pharmaceutical product, you know, is good for something. In other words, if the FDA can't prevent pharmaceutical sales reps from promoting an off-label use, then they sure shouldn't be able to prevent somebody who produces natural medicines or natural products from exercising their free speech right to promote the uses of their products as well. So
I have a big question, though, a caveat about whatever it is about that. And this is one individual standing up for his individual rights to speak freely to one other person, as opposed to making it officially on a label from an industry-wide perspective, not a person-to-person perspective, but making a statement that is broadcast rather than, you know, I have my free speech to say this about gout and cherry juice, me to you. You know what I'm getting at?
Absolutely. And this is an issue part and parcel to law, and for attorneys, the practice of law. A lot of what law is about is making analogies, comparing one situation to another. And you can oftentimes make a legal argument that because this situation has, or this case has similarities to this other situation, this case should apply to this situation. But then the response to that can be, well, okay, there's similarities, but here's how the case is different from this situation. So you can often argue things both ways, and what you have just done is to come up with a very reasonable rebuttal to the article's assertion that this may have, as bad as this article sounds in terms of the FDA control of drugs, it may actually have a good side if this case is deemed to apply to another situation. But now there are distinctions mm-hmm. between this case and the other situation that you just pointed out, Debbie. And
right.
so the short answer is it's not really clear what a court, even if this case stands, if it's appealed and it's affirmed, or if it's not appealed, if the
mm-hmm.
decision here stands, who knows what a judge would do with this case comparing it to a different situation. You know, the cherry juice manufacturer is saying, I want to say on my label that this is, you know, helpful for gout, and I have a free speech right to do that. Well, let's see what the court says. So, you know, we have at best and most here a legal argument, you know, for a positive application of the decision, but who knows ultimately whether that legal argument would be the winning argument. You know, when the cherry juice manufacturer goes to court over the issue. Gosh, I hope they don't go to jail. If the FDA has their way, they probably would. But anyway, some sort of
okay.
flip there.
So what else do you want to cover today?
Well, we had a really disturbing ruling here. We've been much too cheerful. Let's get dark for a moment here.
No. Go ahead.
Well, no, I'm sorry. I say that with a little bit of tongue-in-cheek, I suppose, but truthfully, a very disturbing situation case just came out. It was a New York appeals court that says the federal government can vaccinate your children without your consent, that
Uh-oh.
The federal law, the readiness Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, also known as PREP, P-R-E-P, which is federal law, that trumps state laws. Now, I think I mentioned this just a few minutes ago. Federal law is a higher legal authority than state law. So where a federal law applies to state citizens, if there's a conflict between the state and federal law, the federal law wins. So the situation was this. This was a mother whose child, back during the so-called swine flu pandemic, the child was vaccinated at school without her consent and against her wishes. Probably was a mistake on somebody's part at the school, but she takes the case to court, and ultimately the decision at this level anyway, because I think it could, again, this is one that potentially could be appealed further up. The bottom line was that since this happened during a declared emergency, and I think that's really key, there was both a state swine flu emergency declared and the national Obama declared swine flu emergency at the time this played out, that the federal PrEP laws allowed for the vaccination of this child without the mother's consent. Now, it just raises a lot of serious questions. You know, we have a fundamental right under the Constitution to an obligation to make medical decisions for our children. And the idea that the government can step in and roll over that right is very disturbing. There's a basic principle here of law that is valid, but it's a question of whether that principle is properly used or abused where we got into issues. And the principle is that in an emergency, in a true emergency, the usual rights go by the wayside so that the emergency can be addressed. You know, if your child is riding the bus to school and is in a serious bus accident and the child needs immediate medical attention, they're not going to let your child sit there or lay there and bleed to death while they look to see if they can get the school to look up, you know, the parent's phone number and find them, track them down at work and get their permission. We want and need for government to be able to step in an emergency to address a real emergency need rather than to have somebody suffer harm over a technicality that you have a right to make decisions about your child's health care. But when you talk about something like the swine flu pandemic, which we now know there was no pandemic, there was no emergency, the problem is that there does not have to be a real emergency for a state or the federal government to declare an emergency. And once they declare it, the legal landscape changes whether there's really an emergency or not. And so this is the abuse part of the picture. So it's just really disturbing, bottom line here, that this ruling is that in, under these circumstances, they could vaccinate the child and the mother can't sue, can't do anything about it.
Do you want me to do the reply? This is the reply. You know, after we read about this case in a previous session together, radio talk, I get more and more skeptical about whether the courts are going to uphold the Constitution and take care of the rights of the individual. Greg Glazer, constitutional lawyer from California, Metropolis, California, is really... he has a true faith and belief in the system, which is really nice to hear. And he basically says he has a concern about the topic of forced needles, but there are other considerations. He wouldn't put the question so simply as just, you know, do you trust the courts? Rather, the American judicial system, if properly navigated, and that's in italicized, can and does protect rights with an astounding high, though imperfect, success rate. And, you know, I have to give him credit for that. In most situations, I pray and hope that justice is done correctly. Just like any government service or industry, there will always be cases, people, property, and things that fall through the cracks, and there will always be evidence of tyranny. Likewise, any product, case, thing, or person can be misused or misdirected. On the whole, that powers that want forced medical treatment generally try to stay out of the courts for fear of justice and public scrutiny. That's quite interesting. Note that in this New York case, the school district was compelled into court as the defendant. Also, this is not a correct statement of law by the news reporter who gave this quote. This decision states that the federal government can trump any state law during what is considers a public health emergency and then inoculate or give pharmaceuticals to children as young as kindergarten age with no consent from the parents, all in the name of public health safety. He says, no, no, no. He's emphatic about that. Rather, in this New York case, the first thing to notice is that this child was in public school and the mother was alleging negligence. So it is highly likely that the school vaccinated the child by accident, thus the negligence allegation, by failing to notice the lack of the consent form. Perhaps the mother was taking a poor risk herself by allowing her child to go to this public school on a designated day that all the other children were scheduled for vaccination. That's kind of like a hypothetical there, isn't it? There is probably much more to the logistical story of the vaccination event than just a simple lack of consent document. Also, the appeal in question was a tort case, and that's a legal thing, the mother suing the government for money. So there was no issue about other legal and practical procedures that could have readily stopped forced medical treatment. And perhaps most importantly, the case was dismissed on jurisdiction grounds, with the appeals court stating any tort actions should be filed in federal court rather than in state court. So the case can still go forward if refiled into the federal court system. With proper navigation of the legal system, there are many ways to prevent forced vaccination events like this, and in the meantime, it serves as a bellwether to other parents to take more precautions when dealing with the public school systems. And like he said on the previous show, at our best, we recognize the environment in which we choose to live, and we take personal responsibility for protecting our legal rights in advance. Unquote. That is all Greg Glazer, his response to me when I said, do you trust the courts? So he was very thorough and very kind to take his time with that response. I think it covers a lot of ground.
It's a well thought out and well articulated response. And one aspect of that, in a very kind of more simplistic sort of way, is that while, yes, there is some dysfunction in the legal systems and there are some decisions that are political decisions and not really true legal positions or legal decisions, on the whole, the design of the system, I think Greg and I would agree with this, at least in general terms, that on the whole, the design of the system is sound. Where there are problems with it have to do with certain individuals in the way that they use or misuse the system. But with all due respect, and I have seen decisions from the Supreme Court that I disagree with on a professional legal level. So, and my conclusion on some of them, at least, is that this is a political decision and not a true legal decision. And ultimately, I suppose only the justices themselves know, you know, the truth about those matters, and maybe they don't even know about it if they're swayed in a way that they unconsciously that they don't even recognize necessarily. But in any event, I would agree, perhaps naively, that most people in the system most of the time try to do the right thing. And the ruling here, that the fact that it was dismissed on jurisdictional grounds is important to understand. The ruling here, at least on that level, was not about whether the judge thinks that the school can inject a child without the mother's consent, at least in any direct way. That was not really the question. The question was, did the state court have authority? Jurisdictional grounds means there's not a case to go forward, essentially. And so they didn't really get to the heart of the issue, which is the question about can government vaccinate anybody they want to, including children, without the parents' permission, and certainly not just generally across the board and in any situation. Again, this all happened in the context of declared emergencies, which emergencies change the legal landscape where the usual rules don't apply. So it's a very particular situation. Nonetheless, it is one that we should be concerned about, because the bottom line here, from practical nuts and bolts perspective, is that a child was vaccinated against the mother's wishes and without the mother's permission, and we now know that at least in some circumstances that can happen. And here in North Carolina, it could happen to a child of any age at any time, because there's a law that says it can, and that's a whole different issue and far more disturbing than this particular case. But nonetheless, it's important to follow these things as they play out, because they do carry implications. And when laws get passed or courts make rulings, they can set precedent formally or informally that other courts and other states legislatures will follow. So it is important for us to keep tabs on what's going on and how it's playing out around the country.
Did you have any other issue you wanted to talk about today?
Well, there's always more to talk about than there's time to talk about. But I'll tell you what, I'll make just a mention of a couple of things here. You know, there's a lot of the articles, just remind folks, a lot of the articles we talk about are articles that come from the Pandemic Response Project's news page. That's PandemicResponseProject.com, all spelled out, Pandemic Response Project, and link at the upper right-hand corner of every page will take you to the news page. So there are a couple of recent cases that we're talking about, outbreaks associated with vaccinated children. One article just said that there's a mumps outbreak that involved 97% vaccinated children. There was another article saying that, let me see if I can find the title here. They were saying that something on the order of 90% of pertussis cases being attributed to or happening in vaccinated children. In fact, there's even some people who are suggesting that the pertussis vaccine is actually causing the outbreaks. But in any event, we have at least some health authorities with integrity, perhaps on the whole quietly, but nonetheless starting to recognize and acknowledge that the vaccines aren't working, you know, and there's many different potential responses or interpretations. Well, obviously they wore off and they all just need to be vaccinated again. You know, that's one possible response. But another response is, well, maybe there's something flawed with the way we're approaching our control of infectious disease here. Maybe there's something fundamentally wrong with the whole vaccine program. or at least the vaccines that appear not to be working when vaccinated children experience outbreaks. So there are some trends going on around the country with at least those two diseases, and I think there was another one I heard recently concerning chickenpox somewhere.
So we're hearing quite a few, and I have one concerning, and this is really concerning to me because it's influenza, which is required or recommended annually for children. A vaccine given to babies can increase the risk of childhood asthma. So a vaccination given to babies has been linked to asthma, and well, they're talking about diphtheria, tetanus, and whooping cough might provoke the immune response system to predispose the body to the lung condition of asthma. It sets them up early. For the study, 11,531 children received four doses of the combined DTP, and the babies are supposed to have had their first dose by the age of 2 months. It was found the likelihood of developing asthma by the age of 7 was halved if this initial dose was delayed by 2 months. So obviously the baby's immune system has not been developed enough to handle such an early delivery of this type of injection. Nearly 5,000 babies studied who had the jab at their scheduled age, 13.8%, developed asthma. So there's a link. We know there's a link between the respiratory system in the body and these types of injections. That's one thing. And I also read something about influenza linked to asthma. I don't have a specific it was the inactivated flu vaccine does not appear to be effective in preventing influenza-related hospitalizations in children, especially the ones with asthma. In fact, children who get the flu vaccine are more at risk for hospitalization than their peers who do not get the vaccine, according to from the research of the 105th International Conference of the American Thoracic Society in San Diego. So that's another little tidbit that, you know, that's why the rate of exemption is going up because parents are studying, investigating, and the internet is our living college.
It is, and of course there's information across the board in terms of positions and in terms of reliability and so forth, so it's really important to on critical issues and information. I mean, that's true for information off the internet too. You know, people say, oh, you got it from the internet, like somehow that's makes it, you know, wrong or bad. Well, that's where all the major medical publishers publish, you know, their information. So you've got mainstream information, you've got alternative information, and you have people who have either mistaken information or in some cases outright disinformation, meaning intentionally erroneous to try to confuse or distract people from real issues. So you do have to be careful on the internet. I always try, for important points, I always try to find corroboration. Am I seeing this information from two or more credible sources, or is the source that it's coming from one that is clearly credible in and of itself?
Right. You have to drill down, like you're the investigative reporter. You have to drill down to who is doing the initial speaking, and sometimes things on the internet can spread like wildfire, and it can be an urban legend, it can be a hoax, it can be something that is not true, it can be a doctored photograph, it can be anything, and it's up to us to take it with a grain of salt and say, whoa, let me see whether this is actually fact or fiction.
Yeah, but the internet is absolutely a wealth of information because it's while there are pitfalls to avoid, at the same time it's not going to be screened or sanitized by someone else who wants you to see what they want to see, or if any given source is, you can go to other sources and you'll, you know, see, be able to recognize the sanitized version for what it is. So we have the opportunity to do that. It's a wonderful time to be alive in terms of the technology and the availability of information, but there's a corresponding level of responsibility that we have to check our facts and sources and so forth.
Okay. So we've come basically to our time for 1 hour, and you can, let's just tell folks how they can contact you and what you're available, what kind of services you can provide.
Sure. You can find my information, contact information, and lots of free information about vaccine exemption and waiver rights at vaccinerights.com. And Debbie, I'm happy to say I've mentioned about how incredibly busy I've been this fall working with healthcare workers around the country. And many of them have been successful in the first go-around. Some of them, even with my help, were still having difficulty. And I have, in many instances, been writing to the CEOs of hospitals and succeeding in getting hospitals to change their exemption policies to make the policies, to bring their policies into compliance with federal law. And so I'm seeing just more and more success with my clients, even though with many of them we're having to pull teeth to get there. But the vast majority of them ultimately have been successful, and I'm just real pleased about that. This issue exploded compared to last year. It's probably going to explode again next year, and then there's going to be a push from government and industry to vaccinate all employees with the flu vaccine. So we have to mount some sort of response if we're going to stop this train before it just keeps on rolling down the tracks. But vaccinerights.com, I work with people throughout the country with vaccine exemption and waiver issues and vaccine legislative issues as well. And I welcome calls and emails from folks with any vaccine rights related issues.
Okay, and I'll let folks know what we have available on Homeopathy World Community. Upcoming on Monday, we're going to have Dr. Isaac Golden of Australia, who's done decades worth of study with homeoprophylaxis, which means that infectious contagious diseases have been halted in its tracks by the use of giving massive doses, I mean not large doses, but to a massive number of people, in the millions of people, in countries that have been given homeopathic remedies in lieu of vaccinations, and the typical epidemic disease does not appear, or in a very small number of the population. So that's going to be very interesting. He's going to have a lot to talk about. That is at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on nissancommunications.com. The channel is The Health In Show. You can also go to Homeopathy World Community. We have thousands of different articles that you can browse through and see the kind of things that people in the homeopathic community talk about. You can favorite us on Homeopathy World Community on Facebook. You could also, of course, make this your favorite show on Blog Talk Radio. Along the right-hand column of Homeopathy World Community are different resources for you. I'm going to get my first batch of ASEA water. It's some kind of redox signaling molecules that have been changing the structure of this water that supposedly helps fight with the immune system. So I'm going to give it a try and see what happens. If you're interested, you can click the button there. Dr. Dinesh Swan is going to be doing a live video programming to educate about homeopathy. It's probably for healthcare professionals, probably pretty intensive, or if you're a psychologist, psychiatrist, or a counselor or a therapist, you could probably reap a lot of benefit. That's going to be starting, I don't know, you have to click that register today button to find out when it's starting. I think that he's doing three sessions. One is starting in January. It's learning how to do case taking in a fast, simple, scientific, and easy process, he says. Okay, what else do we have here? We have the book by Kate Birch, and she's going to be on again talking about homeoprophylaxis, the vaccine alternative. If you want to chime in there, Miranda Castro has given Homeopathy World Community, or anybody who clicks on that button, a discount of 10% on any of the products in her store, whether you want to get some gentle acting cell salts or any of her books that she's written over the decades about homeopathy, or any of the remedy kits or something to deal with influenza. We have also Mary Aspinwall, Homeopathy World. She has kits. And if you're into computerizing and learning on the computer, the Complete Dynamics in Homeopathy has a phenomenal computer program. I use it every day to study and to put rubrics of patient symptoms in and understand what kind of complete total picture and what remedies would pertain to those symptoms. What else do we have? You can check in with Dr. Deepak Sharma at the Orbitz Clinic in India if you have any specific health questions. And don't forget, I'm talking quite a bit there, Alan, don't forget to listen to our Wednesday show with Dr. Adil Chimthalawala Kasim. I believe he's going to do a special talk this upcoming Wednesday about digitalis, the drug that's used for the heart. And he is a cardiologist, so he's going to have something good to talk about there. So I think that's it. And we really appreciate all of our listeners. And if you have any questions or comments, please let us know. We're happy to answer them on the air, and especially for Dr. Adil. He will answer any question that you have about a medical situation. Okay. Did I scare you off?
I'm still here.
Okay. Well, I'm wishing everyone a great weekend, and we'll be talking to you. What are we going to do? We're going to have one more show next Thursday?
I think we can do one, at least one more. What do you say about that?
Sounds good to me. Okay.
And then we'll take a couple weeks off and catch everybody back around the corner of the first of the year.
2013. It's almost here. Yep. Okay. Creating Waves of Awareness. We love you. Send out that light.
Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to educate before you vaccinate.
Think of us together, like people everywhere. We dream about a world at work where people really care. Our paths now lie before us. Our journeys can be invented. So they do. Wisdom from within. Share your light, let your peace be of earth. Walk by walk, we are reaching the world. We see the world around us, it's pain and misery, but now we know. Allow our souls to shine, bringing forth a great new love and healing for mankind. Share your light, let your love be unfurled. One by one, we are changing the world. It takes an act of loving will to cause a change to me. So light your inner candle and never guard its flame. And as its radiance grows brighter to the world, it will proclaim. Share your light, let your truth be unfurled. One by one, we are free. Share your light, let your truth